Betting on sports can be hard, but hiring Morgan & Morgan is easy. Morgan & Morgan is America's largest injury law firm. They have over 100 offices nationwide and more than 1,000 lawyers. Their fee is free unless they win. For more information, go to forthepeople.com/bestbets or dial pound law. That's pound 529 from your cell phone. That's forthepeople.com/bestbets. This is a paid advertisement.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. This is Michael Lombardi here for the Lombardi Line. I'm joined by Will Hill, filling in for Dave Ross, who's enjoying some family time back in Norfolk, Virginia, or Virginia Beach, I should say. Will, welcome. It's good to have you here on Thanksgiving. You know, we got parades, we got high school football, we got football in the backyard, and then we have real football starting early enough in the day. And you've done a wonderful job with the schedule. I appreciate you today.
Happy Thanksgiving, Lombardi. Yeah, it's a great holiday, especially, you know, as you get older. Like when you're a kid, Christmas is the best, or, you know, Hanukkah. But as you get older, you know, Thanksgiving, you don't have to buy any presents. You just, you eat, you watch the games, and it's great. It's a great week. We've had a fun week. We got all the Black Friday games tomorrow in college football. So fun weekend of college football, all the NFL games today. Lions Bears is interesting because, you know, I'm sure we'll start off with this. It got down to 8.5. I don't know if you saw this. It got down to 8.5 at Circa. So somebody's betting the Bears. I don't know that, you know, you make that bet against the Lions with the way they're playing. I don't know how good that feels, especially now you're across a key number of 10. We're mostly at 9, 9.5. So somebody's betting the Bears. There is some confidence here in the underdog.
I think, to me, what I've seen happens too much in betting, in the betting world, is the L looks more important and the W become more important in the betting than the actual game itself. Like, let's take the Rams, for example, right? All I heard about for the Rams going into the Sunday night game against Philadelphia was how they were so hot. They're on they've won four out of the last five, right? They did. They posted those wins, but they weren't really impressive wins. They weren't. They won a game in Seattle that even Sean McVay said he shouldn't have won. You know, they went back to New England and won a game that they won, but their defense wasn't great, you know, and Miami beat the hell out of them. And so I think the W's tend to discourage us a little bit in one direction. And then I think the L's do too. And when you look at what's happened here with the Bears, I mean, the Bears take the Packers down to the last play of the game, right? I mean, whatever you want to say about the Bears and you want to talk about Eberflus and their lack of this and their lack of that, you know, since Thomas Brown's taken over, they've done a better job offensively and they've moved the football, and defensively, they're just not what everybody thinks. But in that game, right? I mean, they're right there. You know, the last three games, they're right there. They lose a 1-point game to Green Bay, and they lose a 3-point game in overtime to Minnesota. So I think the reflection of that line, Will, is because the smart people, the people that run numbers and look at the teams and watch the tape, realize that they're actually improved over the last 2 weeks. Just because they have L's doesn't mean that they're a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, a couple bounces of the ball, and this is like a 500 team. I mean, the Washington game, the Hail Mary, Green Bay make a kick right there. You're talking about, you know, a 6-5 team, and hey, they're over 500. Can they make the playoffs? The whole conversation is different. But that didn't happen, so maybe that does provide some value on the Bears. Again, you're not getting the best of the number. I mean, you could have gotten 10.5 Monday, Tuesday, now to take 9, 9.5. You know, I don't know that that's the good. I would still lean towards the Bears, and we talked about this yesterday. If you look back last year, the Bears split the two games with them. The Bears should have beaten them both times. They won 28-13 in Chicago in December. They dominated the game, and they're up 12 with 4 minutes to go in Detroit. Detroit with a furious comeback to end up winning the game, I think by a point. They picked Goff off 5 times. So, I mean, does that carry over to this year and to these two games? And I think if you're handicapping this game, if you're betting this game, you have to ask yourself, is this real with Caleb Williams the last two games, Thomas Brown as offensive coordinator? Like, what have you seen the last 2 weeks with Caleb Williams? Is this something that's sustainable?
Well, it is sustainable. They've got 43 first downs the last two games. The prior three games, they got 44 first downs. So they've actually improved so much. And they've installed this rhythm passing game, three-step, spacing, you know, trying to take advantage, getting the ball out of his hands quickly, forcing him to throw it quickly. I think he's done a really good job of moving around. He's made some – I mean, the play to Swift down the sideline that he makes – scrambling to his right. Swift makes a wonderful catch on it against the Minnesota Vikings. Was incredible. But they've done a better job of trying to take their offensive line out of play, stop trying to get the ball vertically down the field, and let yards after the catch be their manifesto. I think they certainly have done a good job. I think the other reason this line's moving, Will, is because with Taylor Decker out, right, this offensive line with Ragnon at center and Sewell at right tackle is dominant, right? But when you lose Decker, now Dan Skipper's got to go in and play over there. Not the same thing against Montez Sweat. So you're looking at an advantage that maybe you could get some pressure on Goff. Though, you know, Ben Johnson does a really good job of handling the deficiencies within the matchups, right? So he knows you're going to chip them. You're going to have to do some things. But I think that's the reason why. And I think the familiarity of the offense versus the defense versus the offense, it does give you an advantage. This game's going to come down to one of the strengths of Detroit, besides their offensive line. When you look at their defense, I know everybody wants to talk about Za'Darius Smith coming in, but the strength of their defense is the defensive tackles. They have been really good at defensive tackle with Reeder and Lee McNeil, who's one of the better players in the league that no one talks about, being able to push that pocket back and create some problems. And I think Aaron Glenn's done a really good job of becoming a good defensive coordinator for them as he's grown. And I think when you look at what they've been able to do over the last few weeks defensively against some good offenses, right? I mean, the last 3 weeks since they played Green Bay, where they gave up 411 yards, they haven't given up over 270 yards in any game. Last week, Indianapolis had 268, and they couldn't do anything. And they've really done a good job of stopping the run. There was a period there since their bye week where Minnesota, Tennessee, and Green Bay really ran the ball effectively on them, but that has not been the case ever since. And the Bears have no running game. If this becomes a 45-pass game for Caleb, can he win it? I think that's the hard question, Will.
If you like the Bears, do you like the over two? Like, what are your thoughts on the total? Because I think Detroit's going to be able to run the ball on the Bears. I think they're going to probably hit them with some explosive runs. If you're betting the Bears, is the thought, hey, the over, they're going to keep up? Like, the Bears aren't going to make this a pitcher's duel, right? This isn't going to be a 20-17 game no matter what, you wouldn't think?
Yeah, I mean, 48's the total here. There's some, there's a 47.5 out there offshore. There's some, you know, around that you could find if you monitor it. But 48, to me, seems like the most consensus number. I think what you're looking at is when you're at 48, you're looking at a 24, you know, 23. You're thinking 27, 23, that's 50, right? So right. If you think this game's going to get into the 20s, You lean towards the over. I think both teams have to run the ball. I think the clock's got to keep going. And one thing Chicago won't do is give up an explosive play. I mean, Chicago's not going to let the ball get thrown over the head. They don't play enough man-to-man to let it get thrown over the head. And I think they'll do a good job on all this play action. I lean slightly to the under, Will, but I'm not great at the over. I can visualize this being a 27-23 game, which is at 50. I could see it being 28-24. So that would tend to lean towards the other. I think the game's in the 20s. I really do. But the way Detroit's played defense the last 3 weeks, that's not the case. We thought Indy would move the ball with better consistency than they did in the last game. And Indy didn't move the ball really at all. Even with all their gadget stuff and all the quarterback runs, they struggled. I mean, this Detroit defense now has played really well. They've only given up like, what, 35 points the last three games against Houston. Now, I know Jacksonville was terrible, but Indy. And then I think they play better at home, don't you?
I do. I'm curious what you think about these, because I like to bet these. The team totals. Bears team total over under 19.5 points scored. Lions team total over under 28.5 points scored. Anything there for you?
Well, I think I would lean towards slightly towards the under with the Lions. I think the Bears will play better defense today, you know, and I would lean, you know, probably slightly to the over for the Bears. Look, here's the problem. When you play Detroit, they're the best third. Nobody realizes this. They're the best third down defense in football. The best third down defense in football. They're the second best red zone defense in football. I mean, these numbers are just not, you know, look, they've just played Mac Jones and Anthony Richardson, okay? So, and they played C.J. Stroud, and C.J. Stroud was horrible against them. You know, they throw 5 interceptions, and Houston only had 248 yards in that game. So, and look, this is the thing about Detroit that's fascinating. They had the 5 turnovers against Houston. They had 1 turnover against Minnesota. But since their bye week, they're the only games they had turnovers in. So for you to get over those totals, you're going to need extra possessions. And do you think that Detroit's going to turn it over? I think that's the question you have to start off with.
You've been in the room with Belichick game planning for these teams. If Belichick is preparing for the Lions, this great Lions team, they could go, you know, 15-2. They're this juggernaut. How is Belichick, you always use the term, make them play left-handed, take away their strength. What is Belichick
doing? He's going to stop the run first. Okay. He's going to stop the run. I mean, he can't. You can't let them have 137 yards rushing. You can't let them have 196, right? You got to stop the run. You got to set. It's the same game plan he used against McVay. You got to set the edge on both sides, and you've got to force them back. And I think without Decker at left tackle with Skipper over there, you're going to gain an advantage both in run and pass. So that's going to help you. So he's going to set the edge on both sides. He's going to force the ball to come back into the middle of his defense. And then he's going to make them have to work the ball down the field and take away Armon St. Brown on key downs. I think that's the key, right? You got to take away the receiver and you got to force Goff to play faster. You got to get him uncomfortable. You got to pressure him inside out, not outside in, because he's good at stepping up into the pocket. But what happens is if you pressure him inside out and force him to move right or left, like just picture the San Francisco game on that key fourth down play when San Francisco forced him to go outside. I think that's ultimately what the game plan would be. And then I think to me, the challenge is offensively, the game plan is you got to handle them inside out. You got to protect inside out against this team. You could attack their corners, but if you get pushed back into the guards get pushed back like the Colts guards got pushed back last week, there's no quarterback who can make plays like that.
Is this a steal of possession kind of game for the Bears where you have to fake a punt and you figure, hey, if we play them straight up, we probably can't beat them, so we got to try something. You can't do the surprise onside kick anymore like Peyton did in the Super Bowl. But this
that's horrible. I hate that. You can't do that. Me too. I would think they have to steal a possession. But look, the king of stealing possessions is you know, Dan Campbell's going to have something up his sleeve. He loves a fake punt on Thanksgiving Day. I mean, besides canned cranberries, cranberry sauce, Dan Campbell loves a good fake punt on Thanksgiving Day. So we could see that. When we come back, we're going to break down the other two games on our Thanksgiving plate, and we're going to get into the injury report on some of the games on Sunday. So stay with us. Happy Thanksgiving. You're here on VSiN, the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. The NBA action is in full swing. I watched it last night. It's clearly in full spring. This spring swing, the 76ers lost to the Houston Rockets once again in overtime. So here's a way to get even more action into your favorite players or favorite teams. Play Pick Six from DraftKings, the official partner of NBA. It's super simple to get started. Download the DraftKings Pick Six app, then select two or more players and choose if they'll have more or less of a stat such as points, rebounds, and three-pointers, and more. New Pick 6 players can play $5 and get 50 in Pick 6 credits. Download the DraftKings Pick 6 app now. Use code VSIN. That's right, code VSIN, V-S-I-N, for new customers to play $5, get 50 in Pick 6 credits. Only at DraftKings Pick 6. The crown is yours. Yes, Will, I did watch it last night. And I think they are in contention for the first pick overall in the draft. He's not coming back. Let's be clear. I know this is a Thanksgiving Day show. We want to talk football. But that Ramon Shelburne wrote a column on ESPN yesterday about their dysfunctional offseason, which everybody, including everybody in the media, was awarding them the trophy for having the best team, much like everybody gave the Jets the trophy for the best team.
Very similar. But
you and I both know. We laugh about those trophies in the offseason. When do they ever work out, right? And it's a shocker that Paul George is hurt. But what's even more a shocker is the 76ers are trying to put out there that they sent Joel Embiid to like 8 different doctors to look over his knee as he was resting from the Olympics. You know, he worked so hard at the Olympics, he needed a good rest. And so, you know, especially when he was on the court in the last game to win the gold medal. Oh, he wasn't there. That's right. I forgot. Anyway, so, you know, they said all these doctors said with maintenance and time, the knee's going to be fine. And now they're saying that's not the case. So it's going to be a long year. It's going to be a horrible year. And if they don't finish in the top six, that draft pick's going to go to Oklahoma City, who needs more draft picks.
Oh my.
Like I need to eat more stuffing.
Oh, my goodness. And I know you're always down on the Sixers. You've been right all along. You're a negative Sixers fan. Did you ever think, though, they're 3-14. They've played 17 games. We're sitting here on Thanksgiving. They have 3 wins. Did you ever think this was possible?
No, I never really thought that would be this bad. but I never thought they were going to be good because they have no mental and physical toughness. Their whole program is built on the analytics of we're going to rest, you know, load management. We're not going to practice hard. Like I watched the game last night. They may have the worst offensive basketball team I've ever seen. It's all isolation. Like I know Nick Nurse won an NBA title. I get that. I have respect for that. I certainly do. But I can't figure out what his offense is. It's all one-on-one isolation. There's no rhythm or rhyme. I'm sure Larry Brown's sitting down there in Charlotte watching this saying, what are we doing? Because that's what I'm saying. So, no, I didn't think it would be this bad, Will, but I thought that they were just – they completely over-evaluated these older players. Look, the league is for the young. You need youth. I know you need experience, but when a player shows you who he is, he gets hurt all the time. Paul George, Joel Embiid, you better believe him. So I think the case.
Yeah. Our boy Thomas Gable, who wrote all these Sixers overs and Sixers to win this and Sixers to win the East, to win the title. Yeah, he's that scene from Scarface.
And he knew it too.
Counting the money.
He knew it too. He couldn't wait. Speaking of injuries, let's go back to football because I'll get too depressed here on Thanksgiving. And I want to have a positive attitude today as I stuff my face. Anyway, Tommy DeVito, rumor has it it's going to be a game time decision. I'm told reliably it's going to be Drew Lock, right? So I think to me, does that change your mind on how to play this game?
Yeah, I think Locke gives him a chance because Locke is not like a star or anything. And he's not even good enough to be a starter, but he's a legitimate NFL backup. He had his moments last year for Seattle. I remember the Monday night game against Philly where he played okay. He's at least serviceable. I mean, there's a reason they gave him $5 million, I think, even though they didn't play him as the backup. So this has been very strange. Let's be honest. This has been strange. To bench Jones, to move on from Jones, I understand you don't want to pay him the money. I get that. But to go right to DeVito, now to go to Locke, it's been a weird scenario how they've handled this. But Locke is better than Dallas. And I'll be honest, this is a tough handicap. This is almost like, you know, in the summer when we sit here and try to figure out these preseason games, like, all right, who's going to play for how long? Can anyone score? What's the motivation? Because there's a lot of injuries on both sides. You know, there's questionable motivation with the Giants. We haven't seen Locke this year. And I know there have been whispers that the reason the Giants went to DeVito over Locke because Locke wasn't good in the preseason, which I find hard to believe. You're going to base that decision off a couple of drives in August. I don't know. But let me ask you, do you buy this idea that the Dallas pass rush is a little revitalized here? They got 4 sacks last week. Parsons is back. Can that carry over? Are they too banged up here?
No, I think it carries over. Look, here's what we're going to see all game. We're going to see Malik Nabe. We're going to see Parsons against Evan Neal. I mean, you're going to see Parsons on the left side of the Dallas defense, the right side of the Giant offense the whole day. If you're Mike Zimmer, why would you put him anywhere else? Because Neal can't block anybody. Like I said on the podcast, Neal, you'd be better off playing a Coke machine than Evan Neal because Coke machines, you can't power back. You can go around them, but you can go around Neal too. But you can power Neal, you can go around them. I mean, that's all they did last week. That's all that was going on. Tampa went right after him. And then their center, John Michael Schmidt, is so weak and soft inside, he gets pushed back. Now, Dallas doesn't have pusher backers inside like Detroit does, but I think to me, that'll be a really hard game for Locke. Locke, this will be, he started 31 games for Denver, Seattle, and now he's with the Giants, right? He's been below 60% completions in those starts. He's had 28 touchdowns and 23 interceptions. He's been sacked 40 times in those games in 31 starts. He's lost 8 fumbles and he's made 55 plays over 25 yards. And, you know, there's been times where he's been able to throw the ball down the field. In games where he's won 11 of those games. He's thrown for 7.38 yards per attempt. In games he's lost, he's at 6.25, which fits more into the New York Giants style of offense because they play from behind and they can't protect. They struggle, and I think that's going to be the biggest issue. The ball's got to come out of his hand quick. He's got to be really accurate with the football. I would say this. If you could find this as a betting number, I would bet Malik Nabers to have 2 or 3 catches in the first quarter. Because once he issued that challenge to Daboll that I want the ball, you know they're going to kiss his butt and try to feed him the football, don't you?
I was just looking at it. I made that point on one of the pods yesterday, too. Over under 6.5 catches, over under 70.5 yards for Nabers. I would only look towards the over. Yeah,
me too.
The saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease or whatever. They're going to give him the ball. Just shut him up. He's our best player anyway. Let's make sure we get him a few early.
Yeah, I think to me that's the thing. I mean, you know, when Daboll was reacting to it, and you could see it at halftime. When they came out at halftime against Tampa, you know, I was watching that whole game, and I'm like, oh, they're going to start feeding. And the first play of the game, they throw the ball, they break down cover two, and he hits the window in cover two, and he catches that one. The next play, they're throwing it to him. I mean, it was so obvious what they were going to do. But the issue here is, look, Dallas hasn't won a home game. Will, until since they beat Detroit last year, I'm not sure they beat Detroit in that game, right? But they won that game with the ridiculous call on Skipper. But they haven't won since then. Think about that. And they haven't really had a home field advantage. And a bad offensive line, as you know, they don't travel very well. And I think that'll be a challenge for them. Can they protect it? I would put Parsons. Look, not that Illuminor at left tackle is any good. I think you can go over there and win. But to me, they know if you're a giant offensive coach, you know the protection's got to slide to Neil. They got to help Neil chip. They got to put a tight end over there. They got to do everything. Remember the Pittsburgh game? They played really well in Pittsburgh on the road. But what happened was they got impatient as a play caller. Daboll stopped chipping. And the next thing you know, what happened? The game got ruined. And I think that could be the case here today.
Last I saw, Illuminor was unlikely to play. Is that what you have? Because I thought he was not playing.
I don't think he's going to play either. Okay. But, I mean, to me, it doesn't really matter. I mean, Illuminor is not – I mean, I know they made it sound like Illuminor was a top player for them in the offseason. They had to give him an extra $1 million. But now they got Chris Hubbard over there. So you've got basically a guy from San Francisco, over 30-year-old player, playing at left tackle. You got Evan Neal, who can't block anybody. You got Ben Roten, who the Raiders didn't even want to sign back last year. They gave him money. And then they've got Schmitz, and they got Runyon, who played for Green Bay, and Green Bay let him walk out of there. It's really a poor-designed offensive line. It really is. And all they talked about this offseason was trying to fix the line. I just don't see it. The other issue, Will, we don't talk enough about is their defense. They have one interception. They lead the league in sacks. They can't stop the run to save their lives. And they're the worst defense on first and second down in terms of quarterback rating when they throw the ball. Like, where are their strengths here?
How about these team totals? Giants over under 16.5, Cowboys over under 19.5. Anything there for you?
The Giants have averaged 12.3 points per game the last six games that they've lost. So I would lean a little bit to the over here because I do think they'll move the ball with Drew Lock in the game. And I think Dallas isn't very good on defense. What was the Dallas total?
19.5.
19.5. I don't know how you go over that with Cooper Rush. I that's a hard one for me. What are you doing there?
I mean, the total look, it's so low that you figure like these teams could make mistakes and you could get points defensively. I just think this total is too low. I know some people like the under, but I could see it going over just based on mistakes.
Yeah, Dallas has struggled on Turkey Day. They're 6-8 against the spread, 6-8 straight up, 3-11 against the spread in their last 14. 9 of their last 12 have gone over, though, so we'll keep that in mind. When we come back, we're going to break down the nightcap. Tua going into Green Bay. What a great scenery here on the Lombardi Line. Come back and join us.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Want to bet smarter? Start with smarter insights. With expert breakdowns of this week's biggest matchup to deep dives into betting strategies and trends, VSiN delivers the kind of actionable content that gives you the betting edge. Right now, you can check out articles like Zachary Cohen's Thanksgiving Day Previews, Steve McAdam's NFL picks, first touchdown score picks for Thursday, and there's more to bet on than just football. We also have Greg Peterson's extensive college basketball best bets, Adam Burke's college basketball bet bets, and Nigel Seeley's weekend's EPL predictions. Right now, you can get access to everything we do here at VSiN, including these exclusive articles, for only $60 until May 1st, 2025, with our Black Friday special. The offer expires on Monday, so head over to VSiN.com/subscribe today. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. All right, we're welcome back here to the Lombardi Line. I'm joined by Will. Will, we got a chilly one tonight, right? I mean, the Miami Dolphins, could you have put them in a better place, right? Up in the cold Lambeau Field, turkey sandwiches, still drinking, the nightcap, great scenery. I'm so excited. And we also have the whole concept which we didn't start, right? These narratives are not started by fake news. They are because they haven't really happened. The Miami Dolphins in cold weather, Tua in bad weather. I think that's a narrative too. Do you remember the game against Tennessee?
Yeah.
Oh, I think his second. You remember when it started to rain and the ball, he couldn't 21. Really control the ball?
Late in 21. Yep.
Yep. So, I mean, like, we don't start the narrative, but anyway, Mike McDaniel is going to address the narrative.
I was just going to carry ice cubes in my pockets and throw them at players all week. It's nothing revolutionary. I'm not going to throw it out there for the world and act like we've checked the box of we've got this answered. It's a football game. How do I feel about narratives? I'm very comfortable with narratives because I think they're very predictable and retroactive. So like, what else would you expect? They will always say you can't until you can.
I mean, I'm excited to kill narratives, so let's go. Bring it on.
Why wasn't he excited to kill the narrative when they played in Kansas City last year? Why wasn't he excited to kill the narrative when they played in Buffalo? Like, what makes this game more exciting to kill the narrative? Like, I don't understand it. And I think to me, I couldn't really, could you tell what Mike McDaniel was saying? It's not like he was talking out of both sides of his mouth, that he believes the narrative, but he, you know, like, did you figure out what was he saying there?
I guess he's saying you can never do something until you actually do it. So look, I want no part of Tua in Miami in here. I do worry a little bit. Like, I think that the weather stuff is real. We've seen Tua, like you mentioned, the Tennessee game that year in 21 when they had a chance to go to the playoffs and he was awful in the game. That was before he kind of got his weapons. That was before Tyreek Hill. But last year was a disaster with the Chiefs. I do worry though, like last year in Kansas City, it's negative 20 degree wind chill. This is going to be 20.
Yeah, I mean, I think Will's making a point that, you know, it's not going to be brutally cold, which I agree with. I think there's no question about that. And look, Miami has played well. When they go into Los Angeles on Tua's first game back, they improved. Now, they weren't great offensively. They won the game. They only had 238 yards of offense. They couldn't really run the football. Then they come back and play a bad Raider team and a bad New England team. So, you know, they're able to get a three-game winning streak, but who have they beaten that's really good enough, right? I think, to me, that's the question that you have to ask yourself. Can they come back? They lose to Buffalo with Tua in the game. You know, they turned the ball over one time. Their defense, to me, is where I have a little bit of a concern tonight, especially against the Packers. As the Packers, Jordan Love's ability to throw the ball down the field. Now, one thing about Jordan Love is Jordan Love hasn't been as accurate as we need him to be. I think there's some, certainly in the Packers offensive skill players, they lead the league in drop passes. So they lack some consistency within the framework of their offense. So I think what Miami has to do is they've got to be able to generate some pass rush. They've got to be able to put some pressure on them. I think Chop Robinson, the Miami defensive end who they drafted in the first round, I think he has played really a lot better, and he's given them some juice in the pass rush. So I think that helps them. Calais Campbell, to me, is one of the great stories of all time, as he's able to continue to put pressure on the passer and continue to play at a high level. And he's hard to throw the ball over that big 6'7" frame. So I think that's going to be the game. Can they put enough pressure on this team? They've got a bunch of injuries. Bowser, their outside linebacker, may not play. Anthony Walker, who's been a guy that they've relied on to replace their inside linebackers since they've gotten rid of David Long and all that. And then their corner, their other corner other than Jalen Ramsey, Kendall Fuller, he's injured. He may not play in the game today. So they've got some injuries coming in. But I think, to me, the key is going to be, can they put pressure on Love? Can they force him to get uncomfortable? And I think the Packers have done a really good job of, they're the best pass protection team in the National Football League. They're able to handle that. They're also able to run the football. And I think when you look at when the Packers are most successful is when they're able to run the ball with Josh Jacobs and get him going downhill, make him the most effective player. But as Will was saying before we lost him, I don't think that the weather's going to affect it. Look, Tyreek Hill's played in cold weather. He played in Kansas City. I think he's going to make all the plays he needs to make. I think this game's going to come down to what team can protect the football and what team turns it over and how they handle it. And one of the key elements that I wrote about this on VSiN.com, and you could read it if you're a subscriber, that's why it's important to sign up, is that if you look at this team, the Packers never play Miami. It's every 4 years. So when you play a team every 4 years, you really don't know them until you get done the game. But by having Robert Saleh in the game, that's really helps out, because he comes over from the Jets, who haven't had a lot of success against Miami, but at least he'll understand how to play Miami. At least he'll understand how the best way is to attack Miami in terms from defensive standpoint, which will give Jeff Hafley a better chance to catch up. Because this Packer team, when you look at them defensively, they are vulnerable to the run. The Bears ran for 179 against them. Detroit before the bye week ran for 124, right? And I think whenever you watch them, even at home, they give up yardage on the ground. Houston ran for 142. Now, Houston only threw the ball for 55 yards. So I think ultimately, Will, I think that's going to be the biggest concern. Can Green Bay slow down this attack, and will Saleh help? What are your thoughts? Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we had Will back. Anyway, we'll try to get him back coming up later. I'm sure he's got some certainly ideas. But I think this is the perfect nightcap, because the narrative says they can't play in cold weather, but it's not that cold. And I think one of the things we have to look for early in the game is, can Tua throw the ball? Does he have really good control of the ball? And is the wind a factor? I think that's going to be the key component. I was just saying, Will, after we lost you for a minute, I think two keys in the game. Will Robert Saleh help the Green Bay defense understand how to attack Miami? That's A. And B, watching Tua throw the ball early in the game, in-game betting, into the wind is going to be critical.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, I don't really know how you back, Green Bay in this spot with Miami in this spot with all of the issues they've had. Let me ask you, do you buy this idea that the Miami defense is rejuvenated, or is this based on their opponent that they played better against the Raiders?
Well, I mean, I think it's based on the Raiders moved the ball up and down the field on them. I mean, the Raiders had 328 yards of offense against them. They had 268 passing. And Brock Bowers was going to set a career record for catches that day. I mean, it was unbelievable. But that's Miami's defense, Will. Miami's defense will give you all the underneath stuff. They don't want the ball thrown over their head. They're trying not to get the ball thrown over their head. They're trying to make sure you can't really run the ball on them. They're playing good. Zach Seller is really a good player inside. You know, they've got some big guys in there that help, but they don't want to give up the big play. They want to just kind of get the ball. They're good in the red zone. They're the seventh best red zone team in football. They're the fifth best third down team in football. So what they're trying to do is not give up a lot of plays. But look, the Raiders had 22 first downs in the game and didn't have the ball very long. And the problem was the Raiders defense couldn't stop the Miami Dolphins at all. They couldn't get the ball back. So I'm going to have to be sold that this defense is really good. I want to see it against a good skilled team. And without Kyle Fuller in the game at corner, I think it opens up a whole plethora of opportunities. Now we've got to see where Green Bay is with their injury report. Remember last game against San Francisco, we saw Romeo Doubs come off the field. He didn't practice. He had the concussion. So I'm assuming he's not going to play, you know. Jair Alexander, he had a knee injury. Once again, he won't play. And one of the key players for them is rookie draft pick Edrin Cooper, who's from Texas A&M. He gives them inside speed, and he's out with a hamstring too. So those three injuries, I think, could make a huge difference. We lost Will again. I think we might have lost Will again. Anyway, we're going to come back. We're going to talk more about these games and break them all down. And then we're going to get into the Sunday slate, where we can really can examine some of these line movements that have happened on Sunday and see where we go. So, Will, we got you back. There you go. You sneaking out to get turkey, Will? What are you doing?
I'm getting a little pre-Thanksgiving lunch for me. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, listen, you can, it's early yet. You're allowed to have it. It's all good. When we come back here on the Lombardi Line, we're going to break down, we're going to have a mailbag and talk about some of the questions we get from Twitter. Stay with us here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Calling all VSiN poker players. VSiN is partnered with Poker Now, and together we're hosting an online poker tournament this Sunday, December 1st at 9 p.m. That's right, this Sunday, December 1st at 9 p.m. You can win a golden passport for a free seat in the largest poker free roll ever. the World Poker Tour $5 million free roll in Las Vegas later in December. Visit VSiN.com/poker and register today for your chance to win. That's right, VSiN.com/poker. Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. I think we got Will Hill's Skype all situated. He's ready to go. We're going to break down my top 10 teams. So, Will, every week on Wednesday, when all the stats have been updated, I go through what I believe are the 18 categories that determine who's going to win the game or what attributes to winning. And I wanted to do something that keeps my bias out of the equation. So what I try to do is I take those 18 categories, I put them together, and then I divide, and that comes out with a number, a high-low number. The Detroit Lions have 105 points. The Carolina Panthers have 400 points because of their categories and where they stack. And then I rank the teams, and then the teams just strictly numerically, all by numbers, right? And then I come up with my top numbers, and then those numbers go against the team that they're going to play, which allows me to come up with my point spreads for each week. Now, some of these numbers can be fraudulent. For example, you know, I have the Giants game, and I have this being a much closer game against the Cowboys, but some of the Cowboys numbers have Dak Prescott in it. Some of the Giants numbers have Daniel Jones in it. We won't see either quarterback. So you have to be really conscious of the injuries. You've got to be really conscious of how these numbers got accumulated. But for right now, my top 10, and I want you to take a look at them and tell me what you think. Let's start with the first five. We'll start with the Lions, the Eagles. I don't think anybody would disagree with those two teams. Buffalo, your Minnesota Vikings, Will, and then the Pittsburgh Steelers. What are your thoughts on the top five?
It's a little high for the Vikings. I know, like, when the numbers are all encompassing, that's going to take into account the first, 6 weeks when they were just killing people and dominating good teams. Although some of those good teams, they bury the Texans, they bury the 49ers. Those wins don't look as good, you know, 4 or 5 weeks later. And look, I'm always wrong about the Steelers, but I just have a hard time. The Steelers is a top five team with that quarterback. A coach who still, you know, struggles with clock management, things like that. I'm surprised the Ravens are not higher. That's the one team I was expecting to see that I don't see.
Well, let's go to the second five. We got Green Bay, Washington, Kansas City, Baltimore, and the Chargers. Now, here's the reality about Baltimore. If you looked at their defensive numbers, I mean, in the passing game,
yeah.
This is why they can't get up there. Their offensive numbers are incredible. They stop the run. They can run the ball. But their defensive numbers defending the pass, defending 2 minute, which are critical, right? How have you played the last five games in terms of numerical data? That's all been a problem. That's why the Chiefs have struggled too. They're up two spots from last week. I mean, the Commanders are really on a little bit on a free roll. They're at seven. I don't think they're the seventh best team in the league. Certainly Baltimore, Kansas City would be favored over them. I think the Chargers would be favored over them. But I think what this does though, Will, is it keeps you from having what you just said about Pittsburgh. I don't see Pittsburgh but yet they win. You know, and they find a way to win, and they may play Dallas, a bad team, and lose by three because they can't stop the fourth down play. And then they may play Baltimore and win by three because they do something. And so they're always, the numbers allow them to be in the game, and right. They don't rarely lose a game. I think to me, that's why I'm shocked to see this Steelers game against the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, it's going to be a hell of a game. You know, the Bengals are still, it's back up to three. It went down to 2.5. Now today you see threes across the board at 100.
Yeah. It's like we were talking about earlier where, hey, the wins and losses can be sort of coin flippy sometimes, and the numbers are the numbers. So, I mean, the books, Vegas is telling you the Bengals are slightly better than the Steelers because home field is worth a point and a half, maybe 2 points, not quite 2 points, but they're saying the Bengals are like a point better. So that goes to show you that the records sometimes aren't the most important thing in making these numbers. I'd actually, you know, it's hard to put Cincy in the top 10 with their record, but I think they, in terms of talent, they're one of the 10 best teams. And even though we're both betting against them tonight, we're both picking against them tonight, I think a healthy Miami is right on the fringe of that top 10 too. And that goes back to your point about, hey, some of these numbers are with, you know, who are they playing at quarterback? Skylar Thompson and Huntley and Boyle for a little bit. So when Miami's got their guys and they're in their environment, I mean, they're almost like you need two sets of numbers for Miami, because when they play the New Englands and the Vegases of the world,
Yeah, I think that's right. You do need two sets of numbers when you're playing Miami. Like for me, when I take my power rankings, because of what Miami has struggled with this year, right? Miami has been very difficult to, you know, because of the Skylar Thompson and all that. Like I have this game, Will, at 5.27.
Yeah.
Like that's my line for the game. Like Green Bay should be favored by 5.27. So that's a margin for me in my betting tool as 4.7. There's a discrepancy of 4.7, which is uniquely high, right? But I can't really play that because, you know, I know that a lot of Miami's numbers are with Skylar Thompson and with all the bad quarterbacks that they had for those 3 weeks. So you have to kind of take that into account. You know, like for me, like the Giants numbers are not as bad as the Cowboys numbers. You would be shocked at the Giants numbers. I mean, they're not a great team, but I don't know how you play. They've moved the football. They just can't score. They have 15 play drives. They can't kick a field goal. I mean, that whole Carolina game, the Giants have had 7 red zone turnovers. They lead the league. If they just get 3 points without turning the ball over, they might have won a few more games. So I think you have to be really careful of that. Like for me, based on numbers, I think Pittsburgh should be favored by 3.77. Now the line, and that's why I always look at the circa numbers, and Mike Palm knows this. I always put the circa numbers, the contest numbers up on my board here because I want to see where they think the line's going to close. Now today it's 3, but circa has this number in the contest at 2.5. So Pittsburgh money's coming in soon, right? You know that. The Tomlin 3-point dog on the road, you know that money's coming in.
Yeah, I mean, how many last stands can we have for the Bengals? The last stand. It's almost like the 49ers where every week, like, all right, this is the week they have to do it. At some point, you know what? You're just probably not going to do it. So I know the schedule is conducive for Cincy to maybe make a run here. They do get the Titans who have played a little better, but they've got some winnable games. But at some point, you got to win the games. It doesn't matter the talent, the names on the paper, what you did last year, what you did 2 years ago. And same boat, 49ers, Bengals. At some point, this is this year. You got to win the games, and these teams just aren't winning games. I'm curious, who do you have as the worst team?
Oh, I have Carolina by far. Well, not by far. I have Carolina. My bottom five are Carolina, Las Vegas, Jacksonville, New England, and Dallas. I mean, Dallas's numbers are horrendous. I mean, like, I think Drew Lock and taking the points today is a good play. Like, I did not think taking that Russo took the Giants last week against Tampa with Tommy DeVito. I don't know why he did that, but that was a gift because I would have taken Tampa if taken anything. Because to me, my numbers said there's no way. I mean, Todd Bowles coming off a bye with a quarterback who doesn't really have played a lot. He's going to blitz the hell out of them. So, but the Dallas numbers, I mean, when you go through their numbers defensively and you go through the categories about winning and what matters towards winning, Dallas's numbers are just awful. That's why I think to me, when I said yesterday that I could see Jerry bringing Mike McCarthy back, because this is more of a problem that's related to their talent, not their coaching. I mean, Dallas is, I mean, they're in the bottom third, like points per play defense, they're 32nd. Yards per attempt, they're 27th. I mean, they're not, the red zone defense is 30th. Punts per play, they're 18th. The giveaway total, they're 34. I mean, they're just horrible in every category. And so that's why they ranked at the bottom. The same thing with, I mean, they're slightly ahead of Cleveland. I mean, it's behind Cleveland. You know, the other team that's really, we'll get to it later in the show, Atlanta's numbers are horrendous.
Right.
Their numbers are the last 5 games, they ranked 29th in the league. They're 27th in their offensive efficiency rating. The red zone offense is 21st. Their third down, they're 24th. Their punts per play, which I think is an important stat that no one talks about. How many punts per game are you forcing? Because that encompasses third down in it too, right? So you have to win third down to get them to punt on fourth down. I know it's your favorite play in football, the punt, but 23rd, and then, you know, you go through it, and they're 32nd in defensive sack per play. So I think to me that's where you start adding those numbers up, and you take away what I'm trying to do is take away the flash. I'm trying to take away the sparkle, right? And I'm trying to take away the factor, and we didn't get into it, but we will later, is then you have to evaluate the quarterback, which is evaluated in this thing, but you got to really evaluate it in terms of how it matches up and how it also matches up with the coordinator that they're playing. So, you know, I think to me, that's the key element of this whole thing is trying to bring it all together. I don't think you could just use one model, Will, to just come up with the outcome. I think you have to be very careful, because I hear everybody say, well, I had this number at 2 and here I'm getting it at 4. Well, what was your number really based on, right? I think that's going to be the key.
Yeah, and talking about these bad teams, there are a lot of them, because you got 6, 8, 10 really, really bad teams this year.
And it's bothering the TV ratings, and I think the commissioner's aware about it. We come back. That's our first hour here on the Lombardi Line on Visa. We come back. We're going to continue breaking down all the Thursday games today, and we're going to talk about Sunday.